championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we're going to be talking about the Oklahoma State game, give you our thoughts on what it means for the Longhorn season, what we thought about the offense, what we thought about the defense, and then talk about some recruiting as the Longhorns flipped Troy Omer from Texas A&M. It's a big news. It's a big story. It hasn't happened since, I believe, 2012. Some more big news is now we have Darius Terrell on the show. Darius is a coworker of mine on the Football Brainiac. So, Darius, you mind giving the people a bit of background on yourself and why you're joining the show?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I've been around the game of football now for over 20 years. I had the experience of playing 6A football in Texas. I had the experience, the opportunity to play at the University of Texas, University of North Texas. I've been a part of different worlds. At Texas, I was playing tight end. You know, that's a completely different world than wide receiver where I came from. I got to experience Austin, and it's a big contrast from Austin to Denton. And I really, now I'm back coaching in the high school ranks here in Texas, in Dallas County, and really my life kind of revolves around the game and giving back to young men and others. And I'm fortunate to be here tonight. I'm glad you brought me on. This is a new experience, and I hope I don't disappoint anybody.
No worries, man. Hey, real quick, I thought Denton was mini Austin. That's what I keep hearing.
Is that what I heard? Will, from my personal experience, UNT might as well have been Prairie View A&M compared to UT. It was two different worlds, man.
Hey, man.
But I'll tell you what, I had a blast at both.
My girlfriend went to UNT. You watch your mouth now, all right?
No, that means she got some soul. She was having a good time. Like I said, I had a great, great, great time in Denton, man. It was awesome.
You were a hell of a football player back in your day, too. So you went through the all the recruiting stuff. Jason Sukumel was one of the guys who covered you.
I still got Jason's number and everything. I talk to him every now and then.
You went through the thing that most Longhorn fans, most people usually don't get to experience, which is the whole recruiting side of things. So you have some good experience to draw from on that, and also some experience to draw from playing at, right, D1 football, big-time D1 football. Let's go ahead, though, and get right into the Oklahoma State game. It was a infuriating game at times, but at the same time, a victory is a victory, right? And this might be one of the biggest games the Longhorns have this year. Would you agree?
For sure. I mean, just looking at, again, coming into the game, I think Oklahoma State had won something like 7 out of the last 9 meetings. Texas hadn't beat Oklahoma State in Austin, I believe it was since 2007 or 2009. So really, I mean, even though it was an ugly game, it made it harder than it should have been. I feel like they really were able to, cast out some demons with that one, even though they didn't play well, they were still able to defeat a team with a lot of offensive weapons. And I thought the defense really showed a lot that game, especially with Todd Orlando taking all the, heat on social media like he's been taking the last few weeks.
That, right, exactly. And Tom Herman even said they won with their B and C game, which is something that they needed to do, and they haven't been able to do so far.
All right. Yeah, definitely the last 4 or 5 years, Texas B or C game results in it's an automatic loss. So it's definitely a step in the right direction for sure.
So let's go ahead and take a look at this offense, though, now that we've talked about the big picture. How do you think the offense performed against Oklahoma State?
I thought as a whole, I mean, as they have all season, the offense looks really good. Obviously, anything with offense, football, it starts with the offensive line. Different week, same story. If you go back and just watch that game, Texas offensive line is winning at the line of scrimmage every single play, creating a new line of scrimmage. That's what you want to look for when you watch football games. Texas offensive line is resetting the line of scrimmage every single play, and that's just something that makes everything so much easier for everybody else.
Right. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and stick with my claim here that Texas has the best offensive line and defensive line in the Big 12 this year. The jump between Texas's offensive line and Oklahoma State's offensive line was ginormous. And Oklahoma State's offensive line is really good. They're a good offensive line. But Texas was just able to exploit the heck out of a weak front seven for the Oklahoma State Cowboys. They ran the ball 41 times and passed it 28. Everything they did was pretty well executed. Well, I mean, even though there were some bad play calls here and there, and they got obvious at times, they dominated and out-executed Mike Gundy on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, over 500 yards of offense, if you take out those kneel downs in the end of the first and second half. No sacks, three quarterback pressures, only three tackles for losses, and 220-yard rushing on 41 carries. That's 5 yards a carry, just over, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It also helped that Oklahoma State was playing a six-man box against what was like eight.
Yeah, it was crazy. They kept those two high safeties the entire game. When they did walk them down in the second half, that's when Texas started going to the bubble routes, the quick short game. And it really, I thought Tim Beck, I mean, really, and I've been, obviously I have the reactions at the end of every game on the website, but seriously, Tim Beck has been calling some really awesome games so far this year. And, really it's come down, and go back to that LSU game, he was still on point. It just comes down to executing. The only play I can remember, I can't stand when we go empty.
Really?
Especially like on fourth down. You already know what's coming, okay? It's the quarterback power. And I think we'll have to find a different way besides that. But I feel like, I really do feel like Tim Beck's been doing an awesome job this year.
Yeah, and not just in the execution of the offense, but some of the play calls as well, right? That triple reverse touchdown pass was not just a interesting play call, but it was set up well by a double reverse to Jake Smith earlier in the second quarter that went for 8 yards. So later on in the game, the cornerback is letting the tight end pass him as he's looking for Sam Ellinger or Jake Smith to run down the field. It's stuff like that. It was good contextual play calling that's led from one play to the next to the next to the next that kept Oklahoma State on their heels the entire game.
Mm-hmm. And it was something different. It really reminded me of something that Brian Harsin would have done back when we were playing. I think it's 2011, 2012. Harsin came in with the double passes, all the trick stuff from Boise State. It really reminded me of that. Texas needed a way to, I mean, obviously they have been having success running the ball. Oklahoma State started to squat on the short game a little bit. And they, like you said, he set it up prior to that a few quarters earlier, and he manufactured some offense. I thought it was awesome. It was awesome.
Right. And other guys who are manufacturing some offense, man, Keyonte Ingram. And for the past 2 weeks that he has had, he had a coming out party. And he had only a few things to say after the game. But the one thing that stood out to me was him simply stating, the brace is off, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like he wasn't a big fan of that brace.
That's exactly what I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely looked like the guy he was promised to be at the beginning of the season, with 21 carries for 114 yards. And a lot harder to take down.
Yeah, we heard about how he had put on weight in the offseason, but through the first three games of the year, all we saw was him with that knee brace. And I kind of was wondering if had him putting on weight, had that slowed him down a little bit, had that taken away a little bit of his burst, a little bit of his wiggle. And again, Ingram's not really a guy that's gonna make a whole lot of guys miss, but he was doing some jump cuts. He was making some cuts last Saturday that he hadn't been able to make this season. And he looks like a totally different back out there. Like you said, it's going to make a big difference for this offense.
I mean, yeah, dude, he was hitting the circle button. He was hitting the juke button.
Yeah, I forgot he had that.
Jumping over the offensive linemen, man, it was crazy. And he was a lot more, like I said, he's a lot more aggressive with his runs, but he was patient enough to wait for the holes to open up. And then the explosion he had to hit those holes was very impressive. You know, I was wondering, and a lot of other people were wondering, and like you said, did, you know, the knee injury and the weight, did he lose a step over the offseason? But he had a coming out party here. And Rashawn Johnson also had a pretty darn good game as well. I mean, that freshman quarterback, well, you know, we'll see what happens going forward.
Man, I don't think there's any way he's going back to quarterback.
No, I don't think so either. But that dude is a natural. I don't know if I've ever seen something like this.
No, I mean, well, they do say out of all the positions, and you hear it during the NFL broadcast, they have all the positions to come in and possibly make an immediate impact. Running back is the one, because it doesn't require anything but instincts, you know?
Right.
If you go across the country, look at these, at all of the major programs, running back coach's job, main job is to recruit. Okay. It's not a whole lot that goes into that running back position.
Exactly.
Besides the guy, knowing what path to take on his carries and what pass protections were to be during pass pro. Other than that, it's just talent. And then looking back at the box score from Saturday, I noticed it during the game too. The running backs, Roschon Johnson and Keontae Ingram, were the only ones that got carries. Daniel Young didn't play. They didn't have to use them because they were so effective. I imagine what the running game will look like once Jordan Whittington gets back as well.
And I think it's going to be important for Jordan Whittington to get back because a lot of the times, and we're seeing it actually now with Caden Stearns, these freshmen, they come in and they don't have the armor that they need that Keontae Ingram got over the summer and what Tom Herman called the armor. And they sort of hit a ceiling, a freshman ceiling, by the wear and tear that the next level game kind of brings to these guys who their bodies aren't physically prepared for it yet. So if Roschon Johnson could get some of the carries, you know, he's not getting many, but if he can get some of those carries off to guys like Jordan Whittington or even Daniel Young at times, it'll help him a lot going forward. We won't see some of the issues that we're seeing right now with Caden Stearns, who has yet another knee injury.
Yeah, right. And then speaking, you're talking about those freshmen coming in, Jordan Whittington looks like he's been in the college program 4 or 5 years. So he's an exception to the rule for sure.
Right.
So I can't wait to get that guy back.
And so let's go ahead and get to your position, the wide receiver. And in your notes on thefootballbrainiacs.com, where you guys can get some more info at utdonors.thefootballbrainiacs.com, Devin Duvernay, you talked about Devin Duvernay a little bit after the game, and you called him the next Quan Cosby. He basically is, with his consistency and his reliability. I mean, 12 catches for 108 yards and a touchdown. That dude's ridiculous.
I mean, think about it. I mean, look at Devin. If you go back and look at their builds, I mean, they're both kind of, I mean, I think Quan's more like 5'8", 5'9". Duvernay's closer to 5'11", 6 foot, but they've got that running back build at that wide receiver position. And yeah, like, I mean, just this senior version of Devin Duvernay, just, he reminds me so much of Quan Cosby. I just wonder, I don't want to go too far, but is it possible that he could be, you know, better than Quan was his senior year? Right now, he's leading the entire country in receptions, and he still hasn't dropped a pass, and this is year four. So Devin Duvernay's making himself some money this year, man.
Oh, for sure, dude. He's making himself money this year like little Jordan Humphrey did last year. But the difference was that 40. He didn't have the combine numbers. That's what Devin Duvernay has. He has that in spades, dude.
Yep.
That's what he was so good at in high school, was the eye-popping numbers. He's going to pull the top off of some scouts in the combine. But as you said, man, Devin Duvernay could be better than Quan Cosby. He's taken over for little Jordan Humphrey and then some. But you have guys like Eagles around him and Jake Smith. And, I mean, man, Eagles is a hoss. Have you seen a guy like Eagles, 220, 230, runs as fast as he does? I mean, he is special. He's taken the role of last year's Devin Duvernay and exploded onto the scene. I mean, what is it? He had 20, 30 yards per catch this year with that 73-yard catch where he just outran the entire Oklahoma State defense. That dude is special.
Yeah, he's got a knack. He certainly got a knack for getting behind the defense. I mean, I would love to see him get the ball a little bit more, you know. Mm-hmm. But from a physical standpoint, the guy he reminds me a lot of is, I don't know if y'all remember Darius White. Didn't really get to see him that much. He left before he was one of the first ones to end up leaving. But yeah, that 6'2", 6'3" frame with long arms, that top end speed, man, Brendan Eagles brings something to the table that, I mean, none of the other receivers have. Yeah, Duvernay's got that speed and that body, but he doesn't have that size. Colin Johnson has that size, but he doesn't have that speed. Eagles is the one that kind of puts it all together.
Right, and Sam Ellinger even missed him on another pass where he tried to throw it over the middle to, I believe it was John Burt, where Eagles was open on the edge, going down the seam on the field. It's a harder throw to get to him, but still he was open if you get it to him in the right window. Just missed the window. Eagles could have had another big gain for the Longhorns. And Jake Smith is coming in as well. And another exception to the rule, because a lot of people are mad at Malcolm Epps. They're not mad, or they're disappointed with Malcolm Epps. I wouldn't say mad. They're disappointed. They thought he would be a lot better than he is. And honestly, he's not as good as Colin Johnson, and that's the problem with him. He just isn't Colin Johnson. And at this point, that's fine. He's a redshirt freshman. That's fine. Right. But Jake Smith is really coming in as a true freshman and is being, again, the exception to the rule.
And there's a little bit of a difference between Malcolm Epps and Jake Smith. I mean, like you said, right, Malcolm Epps is just a redshirt freshman. He's got a lot of growing still to do. He's going to get better. Now, clearly, he's a talented guy. They wouldn't have him out there. But Jake Smith was the National Gatorade Player of the Year for a reason. You know, he was a borderline five-star guy. So, I mean, that's just, he's coming in doing what he was born to do. And I love the fact that this Texas staff did not hesitate at all to put him out there and let him be who he is. And what that did, and I know we'll talk about it later, but seeing him letting that guy come in and be who he is, I think that might have helped with them getting that flip from A&M.
Oh yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, we'll get to that later, but I really look forward to seeing him when he starts to get really comfortable in this offense, because you can see it. It's very simplified routes for him. It's very simplified concept for him. Yeah, I know he gets the double reverse, which looks complicated, but really it's just, hey, run here and do this. Once he starts to get more complicated routes, once he starts to get more understanding of this offense, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do, because he looks to be a special guy. Yeah. Because he kind of reminds you of Jordan Shipley, kind of in that slot.
He reminds me a ton. I hate to do the racial comparison, but he reminds me a lot. If I watched the Texas game, they had no names on their jerseys, I would think he was another Shipley. But he's just a little bit thicker.
Exactly. He's got a little bit more meat on the bones, but he's just as fast. He has the same stride. It's pretty darn similar.
Same style of catching the ball. He's just natural, man.
It's natural. And Sam Ehlinger, he did get his first interception, and he was trying to be a little bit more of a gunslinger in this game. He was trying to make some plays, trying to fit the ball into a few places, and it bit him in the butt, trying to thread the needle to Malcolm Epps. But beyond that, I mean, he was 20 for 28, 281 yards, 4 touchdowns. The dude was incredibly efficient with his throws. They're not asking him to do a lot at times with a lot of these throws out to the field side. Flats for, you know, Devin Duvernay to just take for a screen pass for 7 yards, 6 yards, whatever he can do. But he can make those plays that you need him to make, whether it's with his feet or whether it's with his arm. And you saw that in this game. He won Texas this game with passes to Devin Duvernay, with the pass to Brennan Eagles, the recognition in where he put the ball, with his understanding of when to pull and when to take. That over, you know, from his freshman year to now is just night and day. His recognition of the offense and the defense is just at a whole nother level, and he had another Heisman-worthy game against Oklahoma State.
Absolutely. He looks comfortable. And all the detractors, you know, many who probably aren't watching every game like we are, the easy comparison is to say he's a Tim Tebow kind of guy, something like that. But, Sam Ehlinger's got – so I think Sam, and you have to remember, when he first came in, his senior year at Austin Westlake, that dude was banged up. I think he had 3 or 4 different injuries, both meniscus. I think he broke his wrist, something like that, you know. And it never got mentioned, but it had to have affected his mechanics and everything when he came in, when he finally got to Texas, you know.
Right.
And I wonder if over the last, you know, these last few years, if it's just been a process of getting his footwork back right. Getting his throwing motion back right. And I wonder if that what we're seeing now is a result of everything getting back on track after he kind of came in banged up. That ball he threw to who was that in the corner? I think it was Duvernay in the corner on the corner route from the opposite hash. That was an NFL throw, and it was right, like, you know, after, I don't know if you ever saw like Hard Knocks, you would see Peyton Manning and the quarterback coach guys playing a game afterwards, throwing it in the trash can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If they were playing that game, Sam Ehlinger would have hit that right on the money. That was one of the best throws I think I've ever seen him make. It was awesome.
And not to take away from the throw, but Devin Duvernay's catch was fantastic. The two toe touch.
That was an NFL play by both guys. It was really impressive.
And not just that play. I mean, he made some plays to guys who didn't make the plays on the balls, like Malcolm Epps. That pass to Malcolm Epps down the sideline, he threw a boundary pass. I don't know how long far that was, but if that's Colin Johnson, that's a touchdown.
Right.
That's a touchdown right there. I mean, it was perfect. It was literally to the corner of the end zone, right where the end zone starts. Malcolm Epps misplayed the ball a little bit, but it was absolutely beautiful. He made so many of those passes. And before the game, CJ and I were talking last week, some of the keys to the game was Ehlinger getting in a rhythm and being in a rhythm throughout this game from start to finish. And that's exactly what you got out of Sam Ehlinger in this game. Absolute efficiency, putting the ball where it needs to be, making the plays that he hasn't in years past, like the pass to Jake Smith. I mean, he's overthrown that in years past.
All right.
You know, making the hard plays look easy is what he did that game. I mean, that's why he's such a special quarterback. He wins you games like that. I mean, with that last play, 29 yards. Tom Herman had that in his back pocket the entire time. Pulled it out the right second. He could have pulled that earlier when there was that zero blitz. Do you want to get into some of that play calling on those third downs?
Well, I mean, and then just real quick, another compliment. I was talking about how it looks like Tim Beck's been calling some awesome games. A big part of that is having a veteran quarterback, too. He's able to do different things. If Tim Beck calls a play that probably isn't right, Sam's been here long enough now. He's been in the system long enough. He can check out of that. You know, I think that's part of everything kind of coming all together. But, yeah, on one thing I will say, in third and medium, you know, between third and three, third and six, I do think Texas is extremely predictable in the passing game. They love those double slants, man, out of the spread set. And I've been waiting for somebody to jump one of those and pick it off. It still hasn't happened yet. Same thing on Devin Duvernay. In the first half, he hit Duvernay, out of the trip set on a curl route about 8 yards deep. Awesome. On the next series, Texas came right back to that on third and six. They flipped sides, ran into Jake Smith. I knew what was coming sitting down. I know Oklahoma State had to know what was coming, and it resulted in a fourth down. I just would like some more, maybe a little bit more variation on what they do on third and medium, because it does get very predictable. But I know that they're good at it too. So, you know, if they can't, even if they know what you're doing, if they can't stop it, I mean, why?
Why change it?
Right.
And not just that, but I mean, the fourth down, some of those plays, what was it? I think it was the first fourth down where they hurry to the line. And you have three guys to one side. I mean, you know what's coming. You're off balance, four guys to one side.
Mm-hmm.
It's a triple option RPO. Oklahoma State played that perfectly with a cover zero blitz.
Yeah.
That is such an easy play to call against if you're Tim Beck, if you're Tom Herman, whoever's calling the plays there. There is a lot of plays like that where on fourth and third, you have to be a little bit more creative with your play calling and what you do. I mean, that's one of the reasons Texas wasn't able to put up 40 in a game where they should have. Like, that was just bad play calls on third and fourth down. Really missing Colin Johnson. Again, you know, Malcolm Epps just isn't him. And, you know, as I said, that's fine now. But having Colin Johnson back is going to help out Ellinger so much in spreading the ball from Duvernay to some other guys, right?
Right. And also, instead of we talking about the play calling on third and fourth down, you know, we also could just take the freaking points, too. I'm getting a little bit tired of that. It's going to bite them in the butt. It's going to bite them in the butt later. You know, I do kind of wonder a little bit, you know, Herman and Gundy. That was a really, really weird football game with all the turnovers and stuff. But also some of the coaches, I wonder if we were watching a little bit of an ego battle between those two, you know. It was weird.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's a little bit of an ego battle between those two. Those two got huge egos. Huge egos. Yeah,
that was weird. But I'm glad this came out on top.
But Herman's working with the binder, man. He always looks at that binder for, hey, do I go on here and fourth down and three? You know, it's something he's done all year long. It just was a bad play call, and he owned up to those bad play calls. And, hey, you know, if it gets better, great. But as you said, some of those weird turnovers, and honestly, this game wasn't as close as it seemed. One of the main reasons that Oklahoma State was able to stick in this game and Texas was not able to just walk away with it on offense, the special teams. Texas's defense would get a three and out or kill a drive, and then all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't just a freshman mistake by Jake Smith, it was a senior mistake by Brandon Jones.
Right.
It's stuff like that that allowed Oklahoma State to come back and put it within one before halftime, or to get it within a one-score game in the second half. It was stuff like that that allowed, made the defense look worse and the offense look worse, was the special team. That's why it's such a huge – it's the third part of the game.
Absolutely, and I think that was, again, that was a really weird football game. I don't think we'll have to worry about those problems moving forward.
No.
But I'm just, again, in the past, last 6, 7, 8 years, games like that, Texas has always come out on the short end of it. So it feels good to maybe feel like the tide maybe turning a little bit.
Oh, yeah. No, the thing is being able to have miscues like that and win, that's something we haven't had here since, what, 08, 09? It's Definitely. Something we haven't had for a while. But before we go to the guys where it really hurt the most, let me tell you all about LastStandHats.com. If you guys have been listening to the show for the past couple weeks, you already know about Last Stand Hats, the best Longhorn hats out there in the market, just by far. There's nothing that is better. They have great shirts. Actually today, I just got my own Texas Fight shirt with the outline of Texas and the fight in the lower left-hand corner. You guys, you have to get your own. It is an incredibly comfortable shirt. The hats are really stylish. They're really awesome looking. They're better than anything you can find in the co-op or any other Texas store, any other apparel store. It's just a better product. You guys have to go and check out these hats online at laststandhats.com. And if you want to get them, please use the code HORNSCAST10 to get 10% off any item on the site. That's HORNSCAST10 to get 10% off any item on the site. So y'all, wear your heart on your head and go to the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. Now let's get to the defense, which has been the whipping boy of the past 3 weeks. And the thing is, the defense did surprisingly well in this game. Beyond expectations, I severely underestimated the defense and overestimated Oklahoma State's offense, especially the secondary wide receivers. But Darius, what happened? What were some of the keys that caused Texas' defense to really step up?
First off, they did come to play, but I think going back to a little bit of the ego battle, Oklahoma State was being very, very stubborn with trying to force this ball up the middle. And they were having some success early in the game, hooking the ends, getting outside on the stretch. But whenever the strength of this Texas defense is the run game, and every single time, Chuba Hubbard, who's a guy I think the world of, I think next year when Bijan Robinson comes in, he's the kind of guy to look at. Hubbard's a similar type of player. Hopefully has similar type of impact.
Right.
But they shut Hubbard down. Okay. They were hitting that guy. I like the nasty from Marquez, even though he got him, took out the game the rest of the game. When Bimich, after the whistle, slammed Hubbard to the ground. It was an attitude. It was an attitude that, you know what, tonight, we're not having it tonight. And, early on, you know, there were a little bit of struggles in the pass game. You got Tylan Wallace running wide open down the middle, stuff like that. Had you thinking it was going to be a long night. But those guys really answered the bell. And with all the injuries going on, shout out to Montrell Estelle stepping up, had his first career. I think he had something like 9 tackles. He had the first defensive back interception of the year. You know, who would have thought that? guys like, I love Juwan Mitchell. I just thought there were a lot of guys that stepped up that we weren't expecting, and it gives you a lot of confidence moving forward and moving on to the next games in the season. And when you get those guys back that are injured, you know, the BJ Fosters, the Marvin Overshone as well, now you got depth behind them now and moving forward towards next year too, because these guys are getting valuable playing time, being pressed into action when they weren't expected to. And it's just going to pay off later. It really is.
Yeah. But going back to that attitude, it went all the way up to Todd Orlando. Todd Orlando was daring Gundy to beat him with anybody but Tylan Wallace. He used 2 guys on Tylan Wallace most the entire game and had a light, quote unquote, light box. I mean, the box for Texas is pretty heavy pound for pound, but, you know, use less guys in the box, more guys on the outside. That defensive line, man, just absolutely destroyed that outside zone. I mean, their ability to get down the line was very well on display in that game. I mean, they just had too much athleticism. Guys like Keandre Coburn and Mora Ojemo just burst on the scene. I didn't know if Keandre Coburn could really take the next step this year. I know he was going to be good, but I didn't know he was going to be able to take on Big 12 double teams.
Yep, he shows it.
From, you know, maybe the third best offensive line in this, fourth best offensive line in the Big 12. Mora Ojemo had incredible bursts. Herman says the defensive line doesn't need to light up the box score to prove that they're good. They really don't. And Coburn is an example of that. I give Chris Brown's interception to Keandre Coburn. It's stuff like that. He doesn't get that on the score sheet, but man, he makes a difference.
All we're looking for from Coburn is to have 2 or 3 flash plays per game. And he had one at the right time getting through there. That arm over move on a veteran center was awesome. Getting a piece of Sanders arm, like you said, you just need a couple flash plays from that guy every week. And that's something Texas hadn't had in the middle since, you know, a guy like Malcolm Brown came through there 3-4 years ago. And I also thought, he's a guy that I haven't been crazy about this year. I thought Taquan Graham.
Oh, yeah.
Played his best game of the season Saturday, so I need to give him his props. He showed up in a big way Saturday. Malcolm Roach was getting his butt whooped early in the game. He came back in the second half like a man. He showed up in the second half as well. So, no, those guys answered the bell. I got to give them their props this week.
Yeah, man, they held I've been saying Chuba Hubbard forever. It rolls off the tongue. Chuba Hubbard, one of the best running backs in the country, was held for 3.3 yards per carry. The Longhorns defensive line, 12 tackles for losses and 2 sacks. Now, those two sacks were really on Spencer Sanders, but we'll go ahead and give it to that defensive line for just absolutely destroying any run game that the Cowboys had all night long. I think another thing that really kind of helped out the Longhorns was being a lot more conservative in their blitzes. Todd Orlando wasn't blitz heavy or as blitz heavy as he was against LSU or Rice or Louisiana Tech. He kind of took it a step back against Oklahoma State. And I think it's probably due in part to not wanting to let Spencer Sanders escape the pocket, but it really helped out the rest of the team.
Yeah, they had issues with Sanders. I knew they would. He's the first true dual threat quarterback they've seen. I got to watch Sanders play a little bit when he was coming up through the middle school ranks, high school level. A lot of folks don't realize, in that 2018 class, Sanders was the best quarterback in the state in that class.
Oh, yeah,
the reason he wasn't rated as high because he tore his knee up. He's going to be a pain in the butt for at least the next 2 years after this. No, Todd Orlando, again, the plan was clearly to shut down Hubbard in the run game. Tylan Wallace, after getting off a little bit in the first half, he was in the second half, he was held to 17 yards on two catches. He's been tearing guys up all season long. So just the adjustments that were made, again, young guys answering the bell, it gives you a lot of optimism moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, just plain and simple, Texas out-executed Mike Gundy on both the offense and defensive side of the balls. And Tylan Wallace made some insane catches. Just insane.
He's ridiculous.
It was it's like, how do you stop that? He's got double covered. There are guys hanging on him, and he's just like, oh, I'll just go ahead and jump up and catch this ball that was thrown behind me. It's insane what that guy was doing. But I'm interested in wondering, beyond Tylan Wallace's insane antics, what'd you think of that over-under coverage that Todd Orlando had the defensive backs playing?
I thought it was something different. It helps when Oklahoma State, they're different from LSU, whereas LSU had all three of those guys going to play in the NFL. They're NFL guys right now already. When they took away Wallace, it really fell on the shoulders of a guy like Dylan Stoner. Who else they had out there? CJ Moore. The other guys were young guys, and they weren't ready. You're not quite there yet. And the great news about it is it's something Texas is going to play some more teams like that. When we see Oklahoma in a couple weeks, I would love to see that type of coverage on a guy like CD Lamb. Okay. Make the other guys beat you. And, this past week, Oklahoma State's other guys couldn't do it. So I appreciate them not just sitting back there and just taking it like they did a few weeks ago against LSU.
Right, and I also think one of the things about that defensive coverage was a lot better communication between the second level and the third level of the defense and the ability to pass guys off between each other. Now, that helps not having as loaded of a box as they did against Rice or they did against LSU, but there really was a lot better communication between the linebackers, the second level defensive backs, and the third level defensive backs. There was no more wide open passes across the middle unless Spencer Sanders was making a crazy play with his legs and escaping the pocket. Mm-hmm. You just didn't see that this game. And that was a big step up for the Longhorns on their defensive side of the ball.
I agree. And again, they won't. No, outside of a guy like Jalen Hurts, they won't see anybody else like that can really break them down like that. So I don't think there's anything to worry about moving forward.
Well, yeah, I mean, but here's the thing is Jalen Hurts is a dual threat quarterback running the hurry up, no huddle. I mean, Texas has been ripped to shreds by guys like that. I mean, Spencer Sanders shredded the Longhorns on the ground with 115 yards on 16 plays, which if the math is 7 yards per carry, that's just a first down every other carry. Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's a concern, but like they were saying, I noticed them saying it on TV, when Oklahoma State was on defense. You know what? Really, who cares what happens between both 20-yard lines? Once you get inside the red zone, the Big 12, you're going to win the game. Can you hold the other team to a field goal? That's what you're trading now. And if they can, and that's still, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but if they can trade field goals for touchdowns, they can do that 2 or 3 times per game. Texas will win this conference. They will.
No, dude, let's go ahead and talk about it because Texas was incredibly strong in the red zone. I mean, Oklahoma State had 6 trips to the red zone, and they only converted on 3 of them.
That's crazy.
And 2 of them were special teams errors when Texas muffed the punts. Yep. So, really, of the ones where Oklahoma State actually earned it, they were 25%.
Yep, and even on the turnovers, on the sudden changes, okay? Those defensive guys could have been like, man, we tired. We were just out here 8-9 plays. Like, how you screw this up? You know, whatever. Those guys bowled up, and that is a testament to the leadership in that locker room. That's a testament to that coaching staff, man. That's just something that has not been there. And Texas is tougher than everybody they play in, and just you haven't been able to say that in a long time.
Yeah, and if Texas tackles better, I mean, they're stopping them on another one of those touchdowns, the one where Spencer Sanders walks in. That's a third down. And if Caden Stearns isn't diving for ankles there, then he stops Spencer Sanders, and they're kicking another field goal.
Absolutely.
So that's the thing, is tackling was a big problem in that game, but the red zone, the ability to stop them in the red zone, I didn't think they were going to be able to do it, but they did it, and they did it very well. That run's defense was spectacular. The pass defense was better than I expected. And really, Spencer Sanders, you know, thank God he's a redshirt freshman. Because if he was a sophomore or junior, that dude is shredding Texas.
Yeah, he's going to be a problem.
Sure. I mean, another one of those problems was getting a pressure on the quarterback. And a lot of that had to do with Spencer Sanders' ability to escape the pocket, but you know, Texas wasn't really able to get pressure with four guys. That's something that's a big ask, getting pressure with four guys against five.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that, you're going to win games. So the Longhorns need to figure out a way to do that, especially against a team like Oklahoma or TCU or Baylor.
They're trying. I noticed on a couple of third downs. I want to say it was in the second quarter. The defensive tackles were Moro Ajomo and Tavondre Sweat. I think Jacoby Jones was at one end. It was different guys out there. They're trying to find ways, and I appreciate them still experimenting within the games, trying different things to see what works, giving guys chances. You know, a lot of defensive coordinators are like, they don't like changing things. A lot of coaches don't like changing things up. Texas is still trying to find answers, and that's what's most encouraging about it. So, you know, when they come out to Morgantown in a couple of weeks, there will still have been some new tweaks, some new things added, both to the offense and defense. They're not going to stay stagnant. That's the exciting part about it.
Right. I think what you got out of this Oklahoma State game for the Longhorns is closer to an identity for this defense.
Mm-hmm.
This defense didn't have an identity coming into this game. They still really don't. But now we're starting to see, okay, here's where Texas can be good, is if they're in the dime, if they're playing more conservatively with their blitz game, playing the run game in a light box and daring them to run against you. That's your defensive identity, potentially. We'll see going down the line. Let's go. So, Darius, with all that said, what was your general thoughts on that Oklahoma State game? If you could change one thing in that Oklahoma State game besides the special teams, what would it be?
Again, if I could change one thing, I go back to early on in the game where Texas went for it when they were up 14-3. Take those points, okay? Take those points, kick off, make them put another drive together, okay? Even though Texas should have won that game, the truth is the score was 36-30, and they were one onside kick away from Oklahoma State getting that ball back again in their territory, probably going down to score and win the game. And they would have lost that game 37-36 because they left points out there. So if I could change anything, it's take the points, okay? You got a good team. You got a tough team. Okay?
You got a great kicker.
Right. Don't get impatient, okay? Don't try to go for – I understand going for the juggler. I understand all of that, okay? But at the same time, you can shoot yourself in the foot too. And Texas right now, it's too thin of a line playing in this conference, okay, to be leaving points out there.
Right. So let's go ahead and get into some recruiting. Texas just had another big week of recruiting. They got their commits in. There was now 20 commits. Looks like they've got about three or four more spots in that class, that 2020 class. Mm-hmm. But one of the bigger commitments so far this year just happened, and it's big because of how historic it is. It hasn't happened since Connor Lanfear back in 2012. So it's been a while, but the Longhorns were able to flip Troy Omer or Amire. How did you say it?
I've seen it pronounced Omerier, but I Omerier. mean, uh, I'm gonna just call him T.O.
T.O. We'll call him T.O. for short right now. Hey, you know, maybe he'll turn into T.O. I don't know.
Hey, that would be on field. That'd be awesome.
Terrius, from watching the film, man, what do you think that Troy gives the Longhorns?
Well, I've got my commitment analysis will probably come out tomorrow on the donor side for anybody that would be interested.
But, so give me a shortened version of that.
I've got T.O. right now. On my rankings that came out that were updated just last week, at top 25. I got him as the number 18 player overall in the state for 2020. I think he's my fourth ranked wide receiver. Matter of fact, yeah, he is my fourth ranked wide receiver behind Damon Demas, Quentin Johnston, and Jackson Smith and Jigba. But T.O., whereas Demas is the guy that's more of, he's long and skinny his athleticism is his game. Same thing with Quentin Johnston. T.O.'s got more meat on his bone than both of those guys. Oh, yeah. He's about 250 pounds. He's rock solid. In the back of my mind, I wonder, a little bit if he could possibly be a guy that plays a little bit of H-back, but if Texas isn't putting 6'7", 250-pound Malcolm X over there, I assume T.O.'s not going over there either. But, no, I think
pulling a U?
I don't think so. I don't think they'll do him like that. I think they're a little bit more creative. But right now, I think he's projected. He'll stay on the outside when he gets there. The player he reminds me of physically, he doesn't have the same speed, but as far as physical package, just how he looks, he reminds me a lot of Brennan Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
To this point, T.O., he's got a personal best 200-meter dash of 22.42. While that won't get you the state, that did get him to the area finals where he just missed qualifying for regionals. So that's a big guy that's moving at that size, 6'3", 6'4", 215 pounds. I think he's raw as a route runner. You know, his team, Austin, Fort Bend Austin, they don't, you know, because he's the best athlete on the field 95% of the time. You know, they don't move him around a lot. You know, he kind of just, he's got two routes right now. He's got the go route. He's got the stop and go, and he's got the curl. I think he'll have to develop his route tree once he gets there. But the way Texas has been developing their receivers and playing to their strengths, I think there's definitely a chance he can come in and make a little bit of an impact next season, especially with a guy like Colin graduating.
And you'll probably, if y'all want to hear more about it, it'll be up on the board, I believe, tomorrow.
Or today,
depending on when this comes out. I don't know when it's coming out. But yeah, I completely agree, and I've talked about it, you know, on the free side of the board. I think Omari is a question mark for me right now. He is, like you said, he has a great body. He has Brennan Eagles' body, but he doesn't have the athleticism that Eagles has. He doesn't have the speed that Eagles has. He does
have. Not many people do. Not many people do.
Exactly. Not many people do, but you know, I wonder where his ceiling is, because I know he has a high floor, but where is his ceiling as a wide receiver?
I think if everything clicks, he could be an all conference type player.
No, I think he could be good. There's a potential to be good, but what else can you improve on him besides that route tree? I guess if he's really good at running routes in the college, then he can become that all conference, but he seems more like a possession wide receiver at this point. I'll be very happy when I'm wrong on this take, but I'm interested to see if he can take another step in another part of the game that I haven't seen.
Yeah, I think, again, once he gets in the program, you know, they'll probably even take some weight off of him, you know, work on his flexibility. I think absolute worst case, his floor. I don't know if you guys remember Miles Onyebule. He had a little bit of an impact during this time. He was never a star. He'd always just come up seemingly at the right time. I think that's his floor. Yeah, again, a good 6'3", 6'4", guy. He's another big, reliable target. I think with he and Quentin Johnston coming in, I don't know which one it'll be, but one of those two are going to play a lot next year.
You got your Flash. You got your Thunder.
Right. And I think I'm excited about him. I know that 247 dropped him really, really low in their rankings, apparently, due to a performance where he didn't look that great. I didn't see any of the footage from that. All I've ever seen of Troy is the film that he has put out. I see a big ball of clay that if we don't rush him too fast, if he doesn't, you know, think too highly of himself, if he understands he's still got stuff to work on, He could be a guy that turns out to be a really good one here. But he's going to have some stiff competition, too, with guys like Kennedy Lewis, Marcus Washington in front of him as well.
That's the thing. I wonder if I'm probably being way too harsh on the kid. You know, he's not going to be a guy who comes in and is an immediate starter, an immediate impact guy. He doesn't have the fundamentals down quite yet to do that, to immediately step into a role as a starter or, you know, big-time contributor. But given some time, you're right. He's a ball of clay that if you can mold him for 2-3 years and he is patient, then you're right. He can become something that is, like you said, all conference. But
sure,
it's going to take some time and patience. And here's the thing is, compared to the other guys that they have on their board, yeah, he's a guy you're gonna have to take because you're not getting Johnny Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Smith, but Njigba, those guys are long shots. So if you can get a guy like Troy O'Meara on your team, you're all for it. If he doesn't work out, oh well, you know, attrition. That's what happens.
Right. They got their two outside guys, and he and Johnston now they're just looking to fill either one or two of those slot spots.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I think that's going to be it for us, y'all. That has been your 4th and 5 podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man, DT, where can we find you on Twitter?
Hey, thanks for having me on. You can find me at DTerrell, that's DTERRELL 05. Okay, 05. Feel free to add me, send me some messages. I'm on Twitter most of the day when I'm not dealing with hard-headed children.
And you guys can find both of us at thefootballbrainiacs.com. That's texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. You guys are also listening to the Hornscast channel with other great podcasts like this. Go ahead and subscribe on any podcasting platform out there. And on that note, thank you all for listening. We'll see you all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.